My name is Stefania Barca. I'm from Italy originally, but I work in Portugal. I come from, I have a PhD in economic history, but most of my work, I develop my work in environmental history and political ecology. And my main research interest has been for the past 10 years, the jobs versus environment dilemma, let's say, the relationship between work and environment, and so trade unions and environmental movements, and also on a theoretical level, the issue of labor and value, and how these affect the environment. So I'm also involved with the degrowth topic. I've just recently co-edited a book that just came out for Roman and Littlefield, and it's called Towards a Political Economy of Degrowth. So if you want, I can tell you a little bit more about that later. I have been one of the many contributors to the Green New Deal for Europe platform, and specifically to the blueprint document, now the blueprint for Europe's just transition. And particularly my contribution has been in the section on the green public works. So more specifically on the aspect related to jobs and the creation of jobs and work in general. So what I'm going to tell you about, because I think it can be useful, of course, that part of the document is very limited, it's short, and it tries to go straight to the point of what are the proposals. So you can read about the proposals in there. I can just summarize them very briefly. But then I want to give you a little bit of the background of what is behind those proposals, where do they come from, and also how they could also be engaged with, because we, as far as I understand the Green New Deal platform, that's not intended as let's say a definite plan, like top-down plan that is already set up, but it's more intended as a basis for having conversations, broad conversations about the possibilities for alternative economic policies at the European level. And so, of course, also this also applies to the proposals of the Green Public Works section, the proposals about the jobs. They can also be revised in following a conversation that we hope to generate with the civil society, with social actors at all levels, and primarily, of course, with trade unions in this particular of the Green Public Works. My computer says the connection is unstable, so I'm not sure if you can hear me. So if you are not hearing me, just signal, give me a sign. Okay, good. So basically the idea is behind is that of the linking, no, this connecting the generation of income and more broadly social welfare from the what the ecological economics call social metabolism, and specifically the increase of social metabolism, the metabolism of the treadmill of production that is associated with the current ways of producing industrial production. So I think you had a webinar a while ago explaining all about social metabolism, if I if I am correct. So I'm not going to go into that, but just briefly to say, to remind that social metabolism, very simply, is the exchange of material and energy between society and the environment. So all economic activities and agriculture, industry and tourism and services and everything that we produce and everything that we do in society has comes from an exchange of materials and energy with nature, with the natural environment, no? So economic growth, which is the current principle that orientates all economic policies, automatically produces an increase of social metabolism, unlimited, infinite increase of social metabolism. And that is the point that is creating the ecological crisis, because of course the environment cannot sustain this increasing metabolism. And the point here is that to that increasing social metabolism is also linked, connected strictly, social welfare through the mechanism of waged work. And so all kinds of waged work in society are somehow producing increasing social metabolism. And through the mechanism of the social policies that are generally based on the rate of growth. So the aim of the Green Public Works is exactly that of disconnecting these two, so that income and welfare can be generated without also generating treadmill metabolism, so environmental impact, to speak a simple language. So the idea is that what we have to value is what is more associated with use values than exchange values. For example, the kind of jobs and the kind of work that must be rewarded in this program are jobs related to environmental restoration and to care work, and care work intended in a very broad sense, not only domestic work, the work that is done in the families to raise children and to take care of the elderly, but also community care work, the care work that is done more broadly in society to take care of, for example, of disabled people and of to take care of each other at the societal level, so outside of the family, outside of the private sphere. And also we introduced the element of taking care of the environment, taking care, for example, of the urban spaces, of neighborhoods, of local communities in their habitats, no? So there is a lot of work. The principle that is behind that is feminist economics and feminist political economy, which is a branch of political economy that since the 70s at least has accumulated a lot of research on how much work is developed in society that is not waged. And this is called, as you wish, community work, social reproduction work, care work, and all this work is done either voluntarily by people out of their free time, or is done in forms that are somehow it's necessary labor, like for example the labor that is done to take care of the elderly or the disabled people. This is labor that is necessary, and it's not rewarded, typically not rewarded or done in the families mostly, no? But all this work is necessary to, and it's part of the economy. And there have been calculations on the kind of value that would be produced if this work would be remunerated, if this work would be paid. And there has been a calculation very recently, actually, I think done by Oxfam. And the results are astonishing. There is an amount of wealth that is produced in this work that is taken together is far beyond the wealth produced by wage work and by productive, let's say, productive work. There is a common sense understanding that work is divided between productive and reproductive. No, so even if we want to accept this definition, the reproductive work produces way more value than productive work. So basically, the idea here is to finally really grasp with the implications of this fact, of these calculations, and make this the basis for a possible rethinking of the concept of work, of income, and of income generation, and of wealth in general. So this is on a very general, broad level. But then that said, that this refers to the philosophy that is behind the proposal. So these two pillars, care work and environmental restoration work, no? All the work that is implied in regenerating environments in the rural and in the urban space, in post-industrial or de-industrialized areas, as well as in green areas that are in need of restoration. So there is a lot of work to be done. For example, if you only think of the fire prevention, all that will be needed more and more in the next future, unfortunately, to take care of natural environments and make them more resilient to the coming climate disruptions that we are already experiencing. So there is a lot of work to be done there, and this is work that not only does not contribute to carbon emissions, but it's the kind of work that will actively reduce and neutralize the current carbon emissions, while at the same time creating social income and wealth. Okay, so where does all this come from? So let me give you a little bit of the background. The background comes from the fact, the a little bit of history of the of what we call labor environmentalism. So the environmental mobilizations of trade unions, and this historically, we are in common sense, we are accustomed to think that there is nothing in common between labor policies and labor politics and environmental politics and between the two movements, etc. But this is not actually true, because historically there have been many instances of collaboration, and there has been actual mobilization on environmental issues directly on the part of trade unions. Without wanting to go too far back in history, an important, let's say, turning point is 2007, when the International Trade Unions Confederation has adopted its current strategy vis-a-vis climate change, and this strategy is called the Just Transition Strategy. International Trade Unions Confederation is a broad umbrella organization that includes most of the major trade unions, national trade unions confederations. So it's highly representative, let's say, of the world of organized labor on the global level, on the international level. And then there is, of course, the European Trade Union Confederation, which is part of the international. And they have developed this just transition strategy in the past 10 years, has been developed with a sense of formulating labor's own stance towards the climate crisis and towards climate policies. So the idea is that of course there is a post carbon transition that is necessary. So there is total accord, let's say total agreement of the labor organizations in this sense. And the problem is how are we going to implement a post carbon transition? How are we going to do it without hurting workers and working class people and working class communities and people who depend, especially those people who depend on fossil fuel related jobs, the jobs that are hopefully to be phased out in the transition. So this is the question that the Just Transition strategy tries to answer. And this has been going on for more than 10 years now. There has been quite some, let's say, thinking within the ITUC about these issues. There have been public statements, claims and declarations on the part of ITUC leadership, and that there has been active participation of ITUC representatives in in various COP meetings, and there has been also an evolution of the level at, involvement of these of ITUC. That the peak has been the last COP meeting, the 24th COP meeting in Katowice, when there was a declaration, there was an official declaration on just transition that was approved at the meeting. Of course, this is all, let's say, very paper politics, in the sense that then it's very hard to translate these principles into actual policies and policy, even policy recommendations. No, but the Green New Deal for Europe, let's say, it starts from this premise, but it does not endorse completely the same approach that the trade unions movement is developing. Why? Because there is a basic problem with the trade unions approach, and the problem is that the just transition as devised by the trade unions is basically adopting an ecological modernization agenda, a green growth agenda. So all the emphasis is placed on the technological fix and the market fix, with added to this let's say a recommendation, a demand that governments actively encourage and make possible these technological and market solutions, let's say. But this is not the approach that we adopt in the Green New Deal, because the Green New Deal adopts a different approach, which is the environmental justice. Environmental justice is basically is based on a different principle. It's the principle of equality. It's the principle that what what we need is not, I mean, technological solutions, the kind and the scale of transformation that we need to address the climate crisis. So the only policies that can really address the climate crisis are policies based on principles of equality. Why? Because the crisis is basically produced by, hello? The crisis is based on the fact that the environmental costs of economic activities can be displaced unequally across space and across society. So there are always places and people and communities that are disproportionately affected by pollution, by the environmental costs of production. And this is what allows this kind of, let's say, the continuation of business as usual. So the idea in environmental justice is that the most important point is that of addressing environmental inequalities, make it impossible to displace the real cost of production, the real costs of GDP growth that are not normally typically accounted for in GDP accounts, make it impossible to displace these real costs upon certain places, certain areas, certain peoples, certain categories. So if we address that issue, then the ecological crisis, then that's the radical response to ecological crisis. So how does
Can I just pause you? Sorry.
Yes.
Because sure. Gabriel has his microphone not muted and we hear like constant noise. Ah, thanks. So please continue.
Thank you. I'm concluding because I think I spoke too much, but I'm here to answer your questions. My conclusion is, how does this, what difference does it make, environmental justice, when it comes to define the jobs versus environment dilemma and the issue of jobs in the transition to the post-carbon economy? The difference is that the kind of policies that we try to design are not exclusively aimed at guaranteeing jobs, blue-collar jobs in industrial sectors, the preservation of that kind of jobs, which are typically considered as the most important jobs in society, and at the expense of anyone else, no? At the expense of all other kinds of work that is developed in society. Principal environmental justice means that we need to value all kinds of all different kinds of work that is performed in society. So industrial work does not have any preference, any priority, because prioritizing this kind of work, typically what this has meant, even for working class communities, no? Even for them, it has meant accepting a certain kind of dependency on certain kind of jobs, and also devaluing all other activities, reproductive and care activities that are developed in at the community level. So a truly just transition cannot be just about preserving industrial jobs. If you want to, we can resume it like that. And it means to really rethinking what does work mean and what is to be valued as work in society, and rethinking the social welfare starting from there. Okay, I think I can stop here now, and I'm thank you.
Thanks a lot. So if anyone has a question, please, I don't know, like we agreed on, write in the chat. Or I'll see this, please.
Yeah. Thank you, Stefania. I don't know if I got it right, but when you say to value other kinds of work, are you talking about putting it into the market in a way of that they will contribute to this economy, and in a sense let's say make the metabolism continue on the same level, or should we think about taking out of the market or valuing the reproduction sphere, giving more access to the commons, things that are not measured by money. I don't know if it's clear, yes. The question.
Yes, yes, it was very clear. Yes, thank you. Yeah, of course, that's what we are proposing, no? A kind of valuation that is not market valuation. So thanks for pointing that out, because I wasn't clear about when the term value is, of course, is a very controversial term, no? Because in political economy, when we talk about value, we normally are speaking about exchange value, market value. And so we're talking about waged work. And not only that, but typically we talk about the waged work in the private sector, in the business sector. So this is not what we mean. If you have a chance to take a look at the Green New Deal for Europe, you'll see that our proposal is funding the green public works through public money, public money specifically issued at the level of European Central European Bank. So, because this is at the level where currency can be issued, and so money that is not related to, it does not derive from GDP growth produced through fossil-fueled economic activities. So this is a proposal for a real reorientation that is much broader than just the sphere of jobs. And it is related to the whole way of the a whole series of other economic policies at the European level, but which I am not entitled to speak about also because I'm not an economist, so I'm not the right person to explain all the financial mechanisms. But just it suffices to say that it's public money that is going to support this kind of public works and green public works. So yes, of course, rewarding this work. It cannot be done without without generating income, because we still live in an economy where income and monetary income is important, no? But of course, an important part of also of the plan is that of recreating and regenerating the commons, what you were saying, no? And by commons, we mean, for example, one very simple example is clean air. I mean, how much income is wasted in society for people to, sick people to be taken care of, or to take care of sick people due to air pollution, for example. And so just to mention a very basic principle, but of course this environmental regeneration is the most important commons that will be produced by the Green Public Works, together with, of course, also a community regeneration, a regeneration of social relationships, not based anymore on this extreme level of insecurity and constant competition that is really troubling European society at all levels.
Okay, José had a question. Would you ask her yourself, or should I read your question?
No, I can read it. I can put my face here. Well, the thing is, my question is about the relationship between the workers and the owners of the company. And I would like to see how I think you cannot implement these kinds of just policies and just transition without changing the relationship between inside the companies, right? Mm. How do you see that? How do unions, for instance, see this issue of, let's say, democratization of the workplace, if you will?
Yes, that's a key aspect, and it is also, in fact, mentioned in the document. It's one of the pillars of the Green Public Works is economic democracy. Now, coming to your question, the trade unions, as far as I can see, they are not speaking about that, not particularly. That is not one of the main points. And I think this is one big problem in the sense that if you, the just transition ends up being very limited. It's very limited because on the one hand, it doesn't really implement a clear understanding of justice and what justice means in terms of social justice, no? And what do they mean with this term? Because if you look at their document, the just transition document, I have some analysis of them. Basically, their idea of justice is not being left out, being involved, having a seat at the table of the negotiations, of the conversation about the post-carbon transition. So the simple fact of trade unions being allowed to take part in the conversation, it's already considered as a sufficient to satisfy the justice principle. And also maybe the other pillar is what they mean by justice is the fact that people must not lose their jobs because of the transition. So yes, okay, this is a very good starting point, let's say, okay? It's a starting point, but it cannot be enough because, as you said, when it comes to implementing this kind of policies at the corporate level or even at the level of any workplace, what is needed is more than that. It's what we call economic democracy. So not only having a seat at the table, but being equal. When I speak about equality, when I spoke about equality before and the principle of environmental justice being based on the principle of equality, this is one important aspect of that. So equality means that trade unions and workers have equal leverage when it comes to define the policies, because the post-carbon transition must be considered as the overall societal aim and replace economic growth as overall societal goal. So when you replace GDP growth with ecological transition, then it's really something that where workers must take a lead in that transition. No, so this is what we are trying to push a little bit towards this new vision with this document. Of course, we are not saying that the trade unions just transition is useless and it's wrong. No, it's a starting point, but it must be taken on a new level, no? more radical and more visionary, if you want, level.
Okay, Manuela had a question now. Manuela,
yeah,
do you?
I can read it here.
Yes.
Ah, okay.
I'm here. Sorry. We recently have presented the GNDAE at Cork Climate Conference, and there was this question from the audience. We have been asked about if there is an estimate of how many job loss is implied by green transition, and how many of these jobs can be saved with training or other measures for new jobs through the Green Public Works or other compensation strategy. In Ireland, this point is particularly painful because many traditional jobs involved in the peat harvesting are going to be lost with the transition. And this risk to bring disruption in many rural areas where peat was the center of the economy for centuries. So
yes,
there is a plan for the government for the investment of this source of energy gradually, but at the moment there is not any kind of help for those communities. So there is a huge amount of worry from these communities about this point.
Yes, thanks, Manuela. I think this is already happening, as you say. So it's not like the jobs will be lost because of the Green New Deal. It's the Green New Deal. It's the response of the job loss that is already happening, not only actually due to the post-carbon transition, also due to the current economic crisis and financial crisis in many places. So an exact calculation, I don't think it's been done in this particular document, but you can find calculations about that in the documents that I was mentioning before. If you go to the website of the ITUC, the International Trade Unions Confederation, or even ETUC, the European, and you look for just transition documents, you will find calculations that have been done mostly at the global level. So I don't know how useful they can be for talking about specific national contexts, no? But what matters is that here, I think, is that the aim of the Green Public Works is exactly that of having not job loss, but actually a net creation of new jobs. And this is not just in the platform, but is also a principle that has been actually we have incorporated the principle that comes from an international campaign that is going on for a few years now. It's called the Global Climate Jobs Campaign. I don't know if you've ever heard of it. It's been put forward exactly with the idea of pushing the just transition strategy a little bit forward, in the sense of reimagining employment away from fossil fuels and in a way and creating new jobs that will not only replace the old ones but also create new job opportunities that are actively carbon neutral, so actively abating carbon emissions. So if you look, I will suggest to look at this Global Climate Jobs Campaign. It's been implemented, it's been actually implemented, no, unfortunately, but it's been developed as a campaign in the UK, in France, in Norway, and in Portugal so far at the European level. But of course, I mean, it would be good to develop this kind of campaigning at all national level. Just to make, I mean, the idea is to make government aware that there is at the grassroots level, from communities and from labor organizations, there are concrete proposals, alternative proposals based on social justice, on how to make the transition that is already happening. And we are talking now after the European Commission has delivered their own Green Deal, that it's not called the Green New Deal, then the new has been erased, probably because there is nothing new in that plan. Is that it's good old sustainable development green growth strategies. That is not in. It's all based on incentives to the private sector that won't really change anything. So make government aware that there is at the grassroots level, there are alternative plans and there are concrete proposals on how to make this transition in an alternative way.
Okay, next one was Hans.
Hello, Alexander. Thank you very much for organizing this webinar. And thank you very much, Stefania, for being with us and to help us with your expertise on this subject. But the question I wanted to raise is actually two questions. It's about this unpaid work that actually maintains the society. And if the idea is to monetize this kind of work, because the people, they depend on their wages to live inside this kind of society. Or on the other side, if the idea could be to introduce a universal basic income that can solve some of these problems. And the other question was related to this climate job initiative. You think that it's possible to increase these climate jobs without increasing at the same time or maintaining the social metabolism or the use of resources and energy and the production that actually should be decreased in a future degrowth society to maintain ourselves within the limits of the planet.
Yes,
it was clear my question.
No, they're all very good points. I'll try. I think they are related. No, so I will start from this last one. The very definition of a climate job, it's been created to distinguish from the green jobs. No. So green job, when you talk about these jobs, these new jobs that will definitely increase social metabolism instead of reducing it, you're talking about the green jobs, because this is an old idea that has been proposed by the ILO, the International Labour Office, since the early 2000s, as related to green growth. No? But the problem is that it's been proved that new jobs in, for example, in in renewable energy production, no? For example, like wind farms or biofuels, or, you know, I mean, first of all, these kind of energy productions are also have their environmental impact, and second of all, they have not eliminated, they have not replaced dirty jobs. They have just added up. But in a growth-oriented economy, I mean, fossil fuels-related activities are not phased out, are not replaced by the, let's say, the green economies. So climate jobs means something more specific. What are defined as climate jobs? Those jobs that will actively reduce carbon emissions directly. And let me give you just one example. In agriculture, for example, when we, as we suggest in the plan, go towards transformation of the way we farm, transformation of farming away from industrial monoculture, heavily subsidized by and based on the use of oil-based fertilizers and pesticides, and away from industrial meat production with its, of course, enormous emissions. And we transform agriculture in the sense of agroecology, in the sense of, which is a science that has been developed since now at least 2-3 decades. So we have the science of how to farm differently. And this kind of agroecology, this different farming, is more labor intensive than industrial agriculture. So it will actually produce more jobs than industrial farming. And these jobs will also actively reduce, eliminate carbon emissions. So these are climate jobs, jobs that actually contribute to reducing and neutralizing carbon emissions. So of course, it's clearly, it's not just a matter of creating new job opportunities in the renewable sectors, leaving everything as is, everything else as it is. But the point here is transforming the way we produce at the industrial level and the agricultural level and at all levels, and energy production, etc. Now, coming to the basic income, that is a conversation that we didn't really have in the plan. I tried to introduce this issue, but I mean, it's not actually my field of expertise, so I wasn't able to actively contribute on this. And yeah, this is a road that has not been taken, so I can't really tell you why. You should ask Pavel Vargan and David Adler, who are the two people that are basically responsible for the overall conception of the plan. But what I think that the care income is sort of a response to that, in the sense that we don't adopt a universal basic income because we are aware that there is strong opposition politically speaking, there are many problems with it, etc. So we actually advance this different proposal that is not about sustaining people's income independently of the kind of work and the contribution that they give to societal development, but it's that actually to valuing through income the reproductive work that is already developed and non-valued in society. So this is an alternative way of framing it. I think that is, and this care income has been proposed by the activists of the Global Women Strike campaign, which is led in the UK by Selma James, who is a very well-known founders of the feminist political economy and the domestic work debate since the 70s. So there is a lot of expertise and a lot of research that has been developed in the past 40 years that sustains this proposal. So I think this is a very well documented and very well sustained proposal to which I am very respectful. Of course, every proposal can be always improved and discussed, but I think this is a very good one.
So we're like roughly in for 1 hour. I don't know if Utz had another question. And then maybe we have a final question afterwards.
First, Marco, I think you...
Marco asked something about the universal basic income as well, and you said like it was already answered.
Okay. Okay, now my question is, I was discussing today with somebody, and I'm here in the south of Germany, where we have a lot of car production and a lot of jobs being, well, cut down a little bit, not too fast, but what I see, and I would like to ask you whether you would also count this under climate jobs, is if these people switch to public transport. And I mean, for me, this is also an idea of, degrowth at the same time, because if we succeed in replacing private car use by public transport, this has an effect on less use of material, less use of less necessity for working hours, and all which is related to degrowth in my eyes. And would you call that also climate jobs?
Yes, definitely. And sorry if I forgot to mention that before. Of course, transport is a one big chunk of the climate jobs campaign, and switching from public from private to public transport. Of course, everything must be done within preset limits of emissions from all the sectors that will be involved. For example, if you plan to increment on a substantial scale railways transportation, that means a lot of work, a lot of environmental impact, no, in the sense of building new railways, and and also in terms of the construction sector, is one of the most polluting sectors. So to build the new railway, you will have to use energy and materials to do that. So of course there must be some form of planning, of carbon planning at the meta level. So the issue of jobs cannot be resolved in piecemeal interventions. No, and they must be really part of a plan. If there is a time in history when we really need a plan, this is now. We need a plan to exit the carbon the climate crisis. Of course, this cannot be left to piecemeal, individual, local, and separate initiatives. But that said, yes, of course, public transport is a big part of the answer. You also mentioned that there was another aspect that I wanted to also
the degrowth component in this, I mean, this has been taken up now in the second version of the blueprint, but the word does not even appear, I think.
Yes.
But there are elements. True. There are lots of elements in it.
Exactly. I think this is the same as a universal basic income. They didn't want to use a word that generates a lot of controversy. But we had conversations, and myself, I decided to contribute to the, accept the invitation to contribute to this document, because I saw in the 10 basic pillars, it's mentioned the post-growth, at least post-growth perspective, the need to go beyond the obsession with GDP growth as the solution to all the problems. So even if the word degrowth is not used, basically the direction, that's the direction of the plan.
Okay, any final question? So if not, then I don't know, Stephanie, if you have like some final points that you want to add, but I think I would call it a day.
Yes, no, I just want to tell you that I think now it's the time to start a very, very widespread campaign. So if you read this plan, if you like the plan, I would just invite all of you to do whatever you can to make it known in the context where you operate. Because I think at this point, all we need is to people to discuss these ideas, to see that there is an alternative plan, that it's not just the Green Deal of the European Commission that is very old, it's not new. So to have a feeling that there are alternatives.
Great. So thanks a lot. Thanks everyone for joining. And
thank you for being here.
Thank you, Alexandra, for organizing.
Yes, definitely.
Hopefully.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.